and welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. Joining us on the line from Albuquerque, New Mexico, the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, how have you been?
I've been well. I'm all excited. Baseball playoffs are ongoing. My team has had a very good first game last night. But your Blue Jays haven't shown up so far, no. Despite the fact that we're all hoping they do.
Yeah, they've dug themselves in a pretty deep hole in a best-of-five series down 2-0. They have to get hot and turn it around quite quickly, or the postseason will be over for them indeed. The show today, Mickey, we're focusing on noble gases. Let's begin on the ground floor. What are noble gases? I believe there are about a half dozen of them.
Well, there are six of them, and they're the far right end of the periodic table. They're called the noble gases because they're basically inert. Not exactly inert, but that name was proposed because it implies they don't make abundant molecular compounds, mm-hmm. and that would be equivalent to the noble metals, which is gold, silver, and platinoids. Like I said, they are in the far right of the periodic table, and that makes them useful because for chemical applications or industrial application where reactions are unwanted. And it basically comes because, throw a little chemistry in here, the outer shell of electrons is full, and mm-hmm. so therefore they approximately have a zero valence state.
Okay, the characteristics of them, there's a common theme running throughout this group of noble gases, isn't there?
Well, they are. Obviously, they're gases, but they have very, very low melting points and boiling points. For instance, helium has a boiling point of 4 degrees Kelvin, which is 4 degrees above absolute zero, and it can never be solid at atmospheric pressure. So that leads to some very important applications. But before we go there, mm-hmm. They are colorless, odorless, tasteless, and non-flammable because they're non-reactive.
Radon is radioactive, isn't it? That's one of the characteristics that kind of really stands out among the six.
Well, it is, and perhaps we should mention the names of things,
yeah.
These elements. We've neglected to do that. Beginning near the top of the far right top of the periodic table, I should say. Helium, neon, argon, krypton, xenon, and radon. And as you mentioned, the last one, radon, is very radioactive with a half-life of 4 days, and it's formed from the radioactive decay of uranium, thorium, and radium.
How long have we known about noble gases? What's the history here, Mickey, in terms of their first discovery, and how were they discovered?
Well, they were basically the last group of elements discovered on the periodic table. Beginning in 1868, helium was noticed in the chromosphere, essentially the atmosphere of the sun, by astronomers. In 1895, a couple of really famous British chemists, physicists, Ramsay and Raleigh, mm-hmm. Discovered argon, and because they now had two of them, Mendeleev, who basically constructed the periodic table, came upon the idea that this is a new row of elements in the periodic table, not known before. So then through fractional distillation of gases, by 1898, Ramsay had discovered neon, krypton, xenon, and sometime between 1898 and 1904, radon was discovered by another chemist. But Nobel Prizes were awarded in 1904 for this. And this really became a eureka moment in chemistry for the concept of electron shells and atomic structure and something called the octet rule, which is basically an outer shell of electrons to be full has to have eight. So this was a very important discovery in the history of chemistry and the periodic table.
Okay, now you mentioned the electronic structures. Initially, I think when these gases were discovered, they were labeled, quote, group zero on the periodic table, and then they ended up being called group 18. Is that correct? What happened between...
Yeah, and so group zero, basically, I suppose they tried to put them on the left side of the periodic table. Mm-hmm. So, and that kind of makes sense, because you got hydrogen and helium on the far right. Well, you could have moved the whole things over there with a zero valence state, but as time went on, they realized they became more fitted in the periodic table. In fact, it demands it really on the right side, and so now they're known as group 18.
Okay, I guess perhaps the best known name among the six might be helium. Is it a very common element out there, Mickey? And noble gases in general, some I guess are more common than others, right? Just how much is there out there?
As far as helium goes, yes, it's the second most abundant element in the universe after hydrogen at 24% of the mass. And it is constantly increasing in the cosmos or in the universe because of nuclear fusion in stars. Mm-hmm. You know, our sun basically takes hydrogen and makes helium, and that's why we get our heat and light and energy. Helium's pretty rare on Earth because it's so light it is not held by Earth's gravity in the atmosphere. So helium is continually being produced by radioactive decay, but it escapes the atmosphere. Argon is very abundant, and the most abundant noble gas. I think it's something on the order of 1.3% of the atmosphere of the Earth, but it once again is produced as a product of radioactive decay. Potassium 40 to argon 40, and this is a really important part of age dating of in geology. Mm-hmm. Potassium argon age dating. Xeon is very rare. We're missing the so-called missing xenon problem. Why it's so rare? Current idea is it substitutes for silicon in rock-forming minerals like quartz and feldspars. Radon, we mentioned before, product only of radioactive decay, uranium, thorium, and radium. It has gotten a bad rap over a number of years for health problems causing lung cancer, mm-hmm. but now there's some equivocal evidence that maybe a little dose of radon is healthy for you.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Who knows about that?
Yeah, I know that the information I gathered, Mickey, was talking about 21,000 lung cancer deaths a year in the United States because of radon. But like you say, maybe the jury's out a little bit in terms of that number.
Well, certainly if you smoke cigarettes and you work in a uranium mine, you're at risk for developing lung cancer.
Yeah.
So, or at least in the past, now we have protections against that in underground uranium mines. But those... alpha decay particles are not healthy if you smoke cigarettes. So
okay. Now,
just give up the cigs and you're probably okay.
You know what, Mickey? I did that about 15 years ago, the best move I ever made in my life, giving up.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
Luckily, I never had that problem.
Right. Now, in teeing up this interview, Mickey, you had mentioned the bright lights of Las Vegas, and that really plays into our next point here in this discussion. That is the application uses of these gases. Tell us about that.
Well, it's true, and we'll get into the lighting applications toward the end of our discussion.
Okay.
Here. But the really important applications are in cryogenics and refrigerants, especially for helium, superconducting magnets, MRI machines use mm-hmm. helium, and most of the applications of these are where an inert atmosphere is required. Breathing gases for scuba diving, mm-hmm. liquid neon is very important in cryogenics. Helium is used for filling gas in gas chromatography and radiation counters, nuclear fuel rods. Of course, we are all very familiar with it in blimps and balloons, mm-hmm. gas balloons. Goes back to the Hindenburg disaster when they quit using hydrogen, because it's not inert gas.
No.
Explodes. Then other things, including arc welding, cutting, metallurgical processes, semiconductor production. Those are all important uses, especially for helium and argon. And then going back to what you said about lighting, and yeah, the neon lights, they have neon in them, mm-hmm. although they have other gases and phosphors and elements involved. But the noble gases are used for a variety of lighting. Even your incandescent light bulb has xenon in it.
Right.
Halogen lamps, gas discharge lamps, and those would be what we commonly call neon lamps. You can make various colors with the various gases and adding phosphors and minor amounts of other elements. Arc lamps, projectors, auto headlamps even have some noble gases in them.
Yeah, there's a bit of a...
This is a very important use. They're also used in something called excimer lasers. These are UHF lasers in industrial medical applications. Laser eye surgery employs noble gases, and a variety of medical applications that use helium, xenon, and radon.
Okay, and just like any commodity, Mickey, there's price movement. As these things are in demand, I would assume, and depending on the supply, you know, the price will go up or go down. Tell us a little bit about that side of the story. Prices for...
Well, we can basically say that the prices are related to their natural abundance. So helium is the cheapest, and xenon, which is quite rare, is going to trade for about 1,000 times more per cubic meter than helium does. Helium is really the most important one, and there's been some wild fluctuation of prices and shortages over the past 3 or 4 years, and we actually dealt with that in a show about 3 years ago. It's hard to think that it's been that long, but nearly 3 years ago, we did a Mercenary Musings radio show called Hi-Ho Helium, Up, Up, and Away.
I remember that, because we were quite proud of the title. I mean, that was a great
one. Yeah, I remember it because not only that, Rob, but I came on and
with a balloon.
And I'd taken a helium balloon,
and
the first 10 or 15 words I said, I had that Mickey Mouse voice going.
Yeah. Well, we should have played the outtakes of that one, too, because we didn't do it the first time. we tried
exactly.
it a few times, yeah. Is there an investing angle to this, Mickey, in the junior market?
Well, at the time we talked about that, when we talked about helium, and there were a couple of juniors that had gotten on board with that. Well, unfortunately, they were trying to do helium, and we failed to mention. Let's take a little backtrack here. That helium is obtained through helium-rich natural gas reservoirs. So there's some of those in the prairie provinces of Saskatchewan. Mm. So there was a junior or two that tried to make a run at that, but failed miserably. The reason these juniors failed is this is U.S. government controlled, and that comes from the fact that there are natural gas reservoirs specifically in central Kansas and perhaps Oklahoma that are very rich, up to 7% helium. There was a U.S. government reserve for a number of years. They've tried to divest of that, but the politics of that divestiture have become very complicated. There was a 2013 congressional bill that was supposed to clear this up. It has not. It's made it worse, and so there are wildly fluctuating prices and shortages, and helium is very much in demand and necessary for scientific research and medical applications, but it's really controlled by the U.S. military, and you get involved in that, and there's no easy way out.
Indeed. All right. Well, let's wrap it up on that, Mickey. What are you thinking for next time out?
Well, we'll continue once again with the periodic table. Well, we're trying to to clean up the ones we've missed. And so we discussed those a couple of shows ago, and we'll find one of those to talk about.
Okay, good stuff. Thanks, Mickey. We'll reconnect in a couple of weeks, and good luck with your Cardinals.
Well, thanks a lot, and good luck with your Blue Jays. I'd very much like to see a Toronto-St. Louis World Series because I have connections in both cities. So,
yeah, indeed.
You could expect me in the stand, certainly in St. Louis and hopefully in Toronto.
Okay, good stuff, Mickey. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right, thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. And you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.